The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood. I'm gonna kill you.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Freaky Friday, where we tell your odd but true stories. It's Friday, March the 21st. We're rocketing through this month. I saw someone on Reddit be like, I think time's moving faster. And I was like, I think it is.
Damn. I mean, it's all made
Can't
up,
prove
so
it
I
on.
Guess it could be.
It's, they're just at night secretly moving our phones up.
Well, then we die faster is what we've learned. Is if the clocks get turned forward, Granny lost an hour of her life.
Thanks a lot. Guys, you're stealing time from us with daylight savings time and probably secret other ways we don't even know about.
Yeah, honestly.
We don't even know about. I mean, I know my phone steals time from me when I just get like sucked into it and I can't pull away.
Yeah, at like 2 a.m., I get time stolen from me a lot. And I'm like, how did an hour and a half go by? Scrolling TikTok.
Those gremlins got their hold on us. Well, you all have sent us quite an array of stories this week, including two legendary grandpas.
We're starting off strong with, we got to pay tribute to these legends. Maybe this will spark some other people learning some wonderful history about their families, because it's made me question, like, what have I learned and forgotten about, like, my grandparents or great grandparents, or what do I maybe just not know at all? Unfortunately, all of my grandparents have passed away. So Same. It gets to a point where you're like, you have to make sure that you retain these stories and keep them alive so they don't get forgotten.
And not only that, because it's inspirational, not just to the family members that are the descendants, like we hear the folks that sent it in, but I felt inspired by these people's actions. And I hope everybody listening is too. And it's like, also to remind ourselves, sadly, that the things that we're facing kind of day to day are not new things. Unfortunately, they're not new. You know, we're like, why do we have to deal with this? It's like, well, at least we have to deal with it. And also we have the internet and each other and we can find each other. A lot of folks were dealing with this as well. Here in this first story, you're like the only one in a whole town, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get freaky. This first one is from your daughter.
Hello,
so
darling.
In a way, this, I guess, grandpa. Pertains to your family as well.
Hello,
which,
sweetheart.
Legendary. It is called My Papa Stood Up to the KKK. Hello, my favorite sinister friends. I wanted to start by saying thank you for all of the work you put into this show. I have an hour commute and listen to a lot of audiobooks and podcasts to pass the time. But your show is my favorite. I'm always blown away by your intellect, humor, and ability to handle heavy topics with the care and respect they deserve. Well, thank you, Anonymous. Moving on to my story. While listening to your recent episode about Ron Stallworth, I had a vague memory resurface of my mom telling me that she had a cross burned in her front yard as a child. I thought to myself, that had actually happened. Surely my whole family would know about it. So I picked up the phone and called my mom. I asked, did I make this up, or did you have a cross burned in your front yard? She confirmed that it did in fact happen. She was only a few years old at the time. She couldn't recall any of the details, so she said she would call my grandma and promised to call me back later with more info. I got a call back later in the day and hot damn, she had some tea to spill. My papa, my mom's dad, was the county prosecutor for our little rural Midwest county for 12 years. This would have been during the late 60s into the 70s. Apparently, there was a trial that the local KKK was very interested in, and they wanted to have a presence in the courthouse. But my papa said, not in this fucking courthouse. Maybe not in those exact words, but I believe that captures the sentiment. They burned a cross in his front yard as a response. My mom was so young that she doesn't remember seeing it. They lived in a small town and everyone knew it happened. During this phone call, my grandma also casually dropped, "Oh, and you know there was the incident with firebombing his office." What? My mom had never heard about this and was dumbfounded. Apparently, she only remembered my papa's second office. The first one had Molotov cocktails thrown in through the windows. My mom said she was shocked and horrified, and my grandma's response was a very nonchalant, "Well, it happened at night. No one was in the building." Is it just me, or is it kind of crazy that this is not an established part of our family lore? My papa passed away when I was in high school. I'm saddened to admit that I never got to know him very well. When I visited my grandparents, my papa was usually reading or doing a crossword. Since he didn't go out of his way to start conversations, I suppose I assumed he didn't have anything to say. Upon his passing, my mom and her siblings went through his journals. They found that he was an avid journal writer, documenting his life, travels, and inner thoughts. My mom also found whole journals of poetry he had written. I wish so badly I could turn back the clock and talk to him about all of this. My papa was a white man, born into an extremely privileged family in the conservative Midwest, and used his position of power to stand up against hate. We should all find the bravery to use our voices to stand up for our fellow man. Progress is pushed forward by people in positions of privilege lifting up marginalized communities. Right now in the United States, there are communities under attack. We need to stand up for our trans neighbors, our disabled friends, our BIPOC community members, our immigrant neighbors. And also, talk to the elderly folks in your life. They may be old, but I can assure you they have interesting stories and valuable lessons to pass on. Ask them anything and everything while you can. Thank you for reading my story, and I hope it lights the fire within everyone listening to continue on in this weird capitalist hellscape we're living in. Keep it creepy.
Well, Grandpa was just silently hiding a wealth of stories, including firebombing your office and a cross in your yard.
It sounds literally like the John Grisham novel. Like, right? All of these things happen, but it takes someone, like you said, a white person from a place of privilege to be like, no, we're not fucking doing that in this courthouse. Take your bullshit somewhere else.
You're not going to come and intimidate my witnesses or my participants in the trial or whatever by staying at, you know, even if they're not in their robes or whatever, like knowing what organization they're from, that is an intimidating factor. This is right around the time, the 60s and 70s, when Ron Stallworth was doing his investigation. The incident with the Chattanooga Five happened over in Tennessee, where five women were attacked by the Klan and then went on to sue the Klan and then sort of set a precedent. But this like 60s and 70s is when they really started getting a foothold after Brown v. Board of Education started coming back. So Grandpa was like in the thick of it, literally.
Good for Grandpa. And it's a good reminder that ask those people questions while you can, because I think sometimes it's the quietest grandparents that have the most unbelievable stories.
And they're just
like, well, I've already seen and done so much in my life. I'd like to just sit here and relax with my crossword. But if you ask them, you know, they're happy to talk about it all. To find those things later is still very special, but it also makes you, it's a little bittersweet that you didn't know it at the time, you know?
It really is. It makes me think. My grandmother kept a diary like every day from like 1964, and she passed away in 2004. My mom has them in this big cedar chest, and my sister's gone through them, and I have this like, you know, dream someday of going through them, and that's going to be really great. But it also is going to make me ask a lot of questions that I'm sure my mom will have the answer to, some of my aunts and uncles and stuff. But like, she's, you know, like, what exactly did you mean by that kind of a thing? So, yeah, everybody that still has your grandparents, all four of mine are gone as well. So ask them while they're still around.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you, Anonymous, for sending that in. And thank you, Anonymous's Papa.
Hell yeah.
Well, continuing on with amazing family members that have done hard but incredibly important things. This next one is from Elizabeth Ryan, and it's called My Dad, the Nazi Hunter. I have previously appeared on Freaky Friday about growing up in the world's most boring haunted house. This is a story of a different kind of freaky. This is a story of how my dad hunted down Nazi war criminals. My father, Alan Ryan, was brilliant. He skipped multiple grades in school, was top of his class at Dartmouth, editor of the Law Review, a U.S. Supreme Court clerk for Justice White, a captain in the Marines, and an assistant solicitor general in front of the Supreme Court. Then, at the age of just 35, in 1980, the same year I was born, he was appointed to head up the brand new Office of Special Investigations at the U.S. Department of Justice. His mission was to find and prosecute Nazi war criminals living in America. After the end of World War II, thousands of Nazi collaborators fled to the United States, obscuring their identities and claiming to seek freedom from the threat of communism abroad. Many of them settled across the country, living unobtrusive lives and seeming to be just average post-war immigrants with normal jobs and families. In reality, they had been planners of the Holocaust, concentration camp guards, and gas chamber operators. They included people like Fyodor Fedorenko, a Russian guard at the Treblinka concentration camp, where he beat, whipped, and shot hundreds of prisoners, even as they were marched into the gas chambers. After the war, he abandoned his family, settled in Connecticut, and worked in a factory until his true identity became known. Of course, the United States had no jurisdiction to prosecute these war criminals for the actual atrocities they had carried out in Europe, but it could prosecute them based on the lies they told on their immigration papers to cover up their identities, jobs, locations, and crimes. And that could get them deported from the United States and back to, hopefully, face justice abroad. So that's what my dad did. He tirelessly worked to find these men, prove their identities, expose their roles in the Holocaust and the Nazi regime, and get them out of the United States, where they had managed to hide for decades. He exposed their horrific actions, their active or complicit participation in the slaughter of 6 million Jews and others, and their deliberate dishonesty that allowed them to slip under the radar and become our quiet neighbors, which is what my dad later entitled the book he wrote about his work. He even uncovered that the United States had actively protected a Nazi officer named Klaus Barbie, who earned the nickname the Butcher of Lyon because of his horrific torture of prisoners in France. He was personally responsible for deporting more than 15,000 people to concentration camps. But after the war, the U.S. helped him hide in South America with full knowledge of his atrocities and even made him a counterintelligence agent. 40 years later, my father refused to keep that fact quiet and made a public report to Congress that, quote, officers of the United States government were directly responsible for protecting a person wanted by the government of France on criminal charges and in arranging his escape from the law. The United States was forced to officially apologize to France for its own active participation in delaying justice for decades. After a few years, my father left the Office of Special Investigations because he wanted to raise me and my brother in his home state of Massachusetts. But he continued his work on the laws of war, genocide, war crimes, and justice by teaching college and law school classes and writing books. He was even invited to Rwanda to advise the government in the aftermath of the genocide there. And he did not spare the United States from criticism when he saw what he believed were violations of the laws of war, especially in the all-encompassing War on Terror. He would be horrified and heartbroken to see the state of the United States today and its descent into a place that ignores the rule of law and embraces outright Nazism. My dad passed away suddenly and unexpectedly in January of 2023 at the age of 77. It was the worst and most painful day of my life, and I am often still crippled by grief in his absence. The Washington Post, Boston Globe, and New York Times all wrote obituaries for him, all of them highlighting him as the man who hunted down Nazis living in America. A well-known journalist is even writing a graphic novel based on his refusal to allow the U.S. to evade accountability for its role in protecting and hiding Klaus Barbie. My dad was an incredible and brilliant lawyer, teacher, and person, but he was also the best father I could have ever hoped for. I am proud of him for his unwavering dedication to justice, and I continue to try to honor his life and legacy with my own career as a lawyer, focused on gun violence prevention policy in the United States. After he died, one of his colleagues said, "Alan Ryan saw wrong in the world and tried to right it." And I hope that I can continue to honor his memory by doing the same.
Well, Elizabeth, I am definitely crying. That's so sweet that someone would not only say that about him after his death, but that you are now a living embodiment of your dad's legacy of seeing wrong in the world, seeing the number one danger to kids. And that's what you focused your career on.
What a beautiful tribute from you and from the publications as well.
Yeah.
She sent some links and some pictures of your dad who, some people you can just look at them and tell that they just have like a good soul.
Uh-huh.
And that's the feeling I get looking at your dad, like the warm and kind eyes, but he looks like he's also smart as a whip.
Yeah.
And your mom was a hottie in whatever
picture
this is taken. Both your parents back in the day. Look at those two little hotties.
Hell yeah. They're rocking the 70s. But for sure, I mean, he's like the type of guy that you would want to sit. I mean, it looks like one of these pictures, he's in a booth, like sit across from him at the booth and just be like, okay, tell me everything.
The professor everyone would want to have.
Absolutely. And I think this understanding that our current listener, her father's career, which was not that long ago, was to hunt down Nazis who had killed as many people as this Klaus Barbie had and others, and to get them out of the country and to see where we, like she said, it's like horrific. And the same with, I was just thinking this during, after we read the last one, Paris's grandpa's barn got burned down by the Klan. Like, it's not like these are like, well, bad things happened a long time ago.
Hundreds
like,
and hundreds of years
like,
ago.
Yeah, Ruby Bridges is still alive.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They're
still alive. Yeah.
And so, like, the people that he was hunting, like, the fact that that was not, I mean, it's in within Elizabeth's lifetime, like, to remember that happening, that's why we love to share stories like you guys. And that's why we're like, go ask your family if you got stories like this. Because I'm so happy to know that Alan Ryan existed. I love that we get to, like, you know, add him to the pantheon of badass people that by association we now get to know and share their story. So thank you, Elizabeth, and look at your sweet dad.
May we all be more like Alan Ryan, but also like you, Elizabeth, because you are carrying on his work. And I know that he would be upset about the state of the U.S., but very proud of you and what you're doing.
Most definitely. Thank you. Thank you. Sinisterhood will be right back.
The new year means new health goals, not just for your body, but for your finances too. But did you know financial health is directly related to identity protection? You need LifeLock because your personal info is in endless places that are outside of your control. It only takes one mistake, and not even your mistake, to expose you to identity theft and lost funds. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by the $1 million protection package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your subscription money back. Don't face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft alone. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Well, this next one is from Helena, and it's called Response to Last Week's Freaky Friday Episode, Cold Case Too Close to Home. Content warning, this story has brief mentions of rape. Hello, lovely ladies. The second I heard the first story from last week's Freaky Friday episode, my ears perked up. I also live in Fort Collins and have been following the Paul Gallenstein story since it happened. It is crazy to think something like that happened in what seemingly is a, quote, safe town. But in reality, so many crazy murders, solved and unsolved, have happened in Fort Collins. The police are almost suspiciously tight-lipped about cases, especially ever since they massively fucked up with an arrest and conviction of a young man that was innocent. He was eventually exonerated due to his DNA not matching with the DNA found on the murder victim. You have to look up the Peggy Hetrick case with Timothy Masters. It's seriously crazy and sad because it's still unsolved. But I have a connection to a different, solved murder in Fort Collins. A couple summers ago, I was working a job at the Welcome Center here, and there were always a bunch of different volunteers that would come to work there too. Many were retired individuals, one being a woman that I, of course, connected with due to our mutual love of true crime. One of the first things she told me about herself was that she used to own a bunch of properties that she would rent out, mainly in the 80s and 90s. One day in 1995, one of her tenants called and complained about their furnace not working. She sent a repairman, who eventually found hundreds of pairs of women's underwear stuffed into the furnace ducts. She instantly thought of the 16-year-old boy that had been living there with family members a couple years before, and no longer. With the discovery of the hidden underwear and my coworker's information, it led to the arrest of a man for the 1989 rape and murder of Fort Collins resident Susan Dahl. His DNA was found at the scene, and her underwear was also found in that hidden stash. Obviously, my jaw dropped. I had just watched this episode on Cold Case Files, all about the murder of Susan Dahl and how they used DNA to solve it. He did eventually get life in prison for it, not death, due to him being 16 at the time of the murder. Sadly, Susan Dahl's murder is one of many, and actually one of the few, that have been solved in Fort Collins. Colorado really can be the Wild West, but at least we have the first openly gay governor. One more thing. I'm Ukrainian, and I want to shout out those still in support of Ukraine. Ukrainians are warriors and just want their freedom from an oppressive bordering country. You both are so amazing and inclusive, and I really admire both of your abilities to lift up the underdogs of the world. As always, keep it creepy, Helena. P.S. I've attached a picture of my two sweet baby boys, Onyx and Oliver. We call this their album cover.
Well, it's incredible. Your album cover is so very good. The vibing.
It really does look like it's two black cats.
And one, over the though, shoulder. I'll put
you
it
got
on
a back
Insta.
Over the shoulder look, yeah. And that the angle makes him look like he's got a tail about 3 feet long, but yeah. Very, very cute.
It'll be on our Instagram for sure. Well, Helena, holy shit, that is not what you want to find in a plugged up pipe. You're just like, oh, it's a plugged up furnace duct. It's probably soot and ash, not a bunch of fucking criminal like evidence.
Dude, shit like that. I'm like, how long were you living in that house before you found that out? And then you go back through just like everything of like, this has been up there. And to be the person that gets just a repairman that finds that again, it's that trickle down effect, the ripple of like horrific crimes and how they affect people that you wouldn't, you know, this repairman certainly didn't show up that day and think, well, this is going to be one of the most awful and memorable days of my career.
Right, exactly. Like the tenant, the landlord, everybody that's involved is like, I mean, on the end of the other end of the stick, it's like, I'm glad that they were able to use this evidence to help solve a cold case.
For
that,
sure.
You know, after, you know, 6-7 years, that's a long time to wait for justice. Of course, it sounds like a lot more cases in the area are waiting a lot longer, but I'm glad at least, you know, they called it in and weren't just like, I don't know, there's a bunch of underwear. It was kind of weird. We threw it all out. Oh, you know, calling it in is good.
When there's hundreds of pairs. We had another story about it was from a young woman who had a connection to a man had killed his wife and put her body in the furnace of their home. And then remember, like decades later,
it's like, this
again,
is weird.
The furnace wasn't working and they went to go see what was wrong.
Yeah. Like stuff like that. Like you said, you're kind of like, oh God, I've been living with this for this long. Or like whenever people say, hey, you know, 30 years ago, someone lived on your property and we actually need to go do some like ground penetrating radar in the backyard. And you're like, well, my kids play out there.
Yeah.
So that's not good at all. Yes. Please go and penetrate that ground with that radar. Cause I'm trying to get it all out of my yard. Yeah. Eerie stuff for sure.
But that stuff gives victims and their families hopefully some closure, and also perhaps solves cold cases that have been on the books for way too long.
Yeah, get somebody off the street, because that's the other scary thing. It's like, not only is that the perpetrator's out there, is that he knows where he stashed all that shit and left it.
16-year-old boy. That's
wild.
Wild, yeah. Well, he's in prison for the rest of his life. No death sentence because of his age. I hope he's having the day he deserves in prison every day.
Absolutely. Well, goddamn. Well, thanks for sending not only that story in, Helena, but also that lovely album cover of your cat.
Yes.
Sinister Hood will be right back.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Well, this next one is from Mick, and the subject line is, I went to school with a killer. And content warning, this has brief mentions of phallicide. Not really sure how I haven't heard this story on a podcast yet, as I went to high school with 7,000 people. Maybe everyone forgot about it, but how anyone could forget about a fellow student cutting a man's head off is beyond me. Spoiler alert, my bad. But my freshman year, a senior cut a man's head off. There were a couple theories, like a drug deal gone wrong, or something about the deceased owing the perpetrator money, but the courts ruled it a thrill kill. I'll attach links to some news articles at the bottom. It's pretty graphic, but here's the story. The victim's name was Dan Sorensen, and he was ambushed by two teenagers, J.P. Orlewicz and Alex Lechman. It was premeditated, and they lured him out to a specific spot in the garage, stabbed him in the back of the head, and then proceeded to burn his hands and feet with a blowtorch before cutting off this poor man's head. They proceeded to dump and burn his body and dispose of his head in a nearby river. The high school I went to was huge. It's actually three schools on one campus, and you walk between school for classes. You have a home school you technically belong to and play sports for. It honestly was a great experience, minus the Michigan winters and this. But I still have memories of the days on campus when JP was on the run from the police. Where would you go to hide from the police? Probably somewhere with 7,000 kids milling about. Classes proceeded as usual, and our dumbasses were running around shouting, "Oh my God, he's over there! No, he's hiding in the creek! Oh my God, he's in the woods!" Yeah, we were stupid, but what do you do when there's a murderer on the loose in your town? I remember walking into one of the schools and about 30 officers had lined the hallways to perp walk someone out. I don't know if this was Alex or JP, but damn, it was intense. They both received life in prison without parole. This wasn't my first brush with true crime, as my dad dated a woman who later drowned her three kids because God told her to. My grandparents set him up with her while he was dating my mom because they liked her family better. There's also the bullet hole through the back of my car from a Chicago drive-by. The bullet is still lodged in my interior wheel well. RIP to the actual victims. Anywho, I love the podcast. Keep up the good work. The world sucks right now, and I'm grateful for any distraction. I work in the queer community and see firsthand how this legislation is hurting people. Trans rights are human rights. Women's rights are human rights. Thanks for your time, and yeehaw.
Well, thank you for ending on a yeehaw. I think the end and yeehaw are the ways that we should all sign off on any email from now on.
Definitely. This is so scary to have it loose in a school of 7,000.
What a grisly and horrible crime. Yeah. I can't even imagine just in a thrill kill if it, oh man, the whole thing makes my stomach hurt.
Oh, definitely. I was reading some of the articles and it was interesting how while it was called a thrill kill in the headlines, that they repeatedly pointed out the prior conviction for sexual abuse of a minor between the ages of 13 and 17 by the victim. And some writers were like, we don't know if that perhaps had something to do with it. But it was strange that the headlines would say, you know, thrill kill of sex offender mm-hmm. happened. That's also a very shocking part of it. But I think the machinations of the killing are shocking as well. But there wasn't any indication that it had anything to do with the perpetrator. It was just a strange thing that they put in all the headlines.
Yeah. Almost as if they're trying to tie the two mm-hmm. together. I don't know why else you would do that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Nothing said that it had anything to do with it, but you never know what teenage boys know.
Or if they're trying to pick somebody and that's who they pick.
Yeah. Or if one of their sisters was somebody that fell victim. Yeah. Or friend. I mean, this is all just speculation of why this specific person would be targeted.
Yeah. And not just like, well, we're going to have a thrill club, like aggressively. It seems personal, right?
But torture.
Torture, yeah, exactly. But yeah, especially from the perspective of the other, you know, 6,998 students in the class, like if there is a time between, we know that this was perpetrated and we know it was your classmate, but we just can't find him. Anyway, algebra's at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Like that certainly is disruptive. So I was just actually journaling today about some high school cruelty that I engaged in. I was like, man, I can't believe we used to joke about stuff like that. And you think about that now and you go, well, why would I have? And it's like, you guys were young, being faced with something very horrific and not probably given the adequate, like, you know, just go back to class, it'll be fine. And then they perp walked the guy down the hallway. So clearly he was on campus.
That's wild. 7,000 kids in a high school is
a lot.
Crazy.
A lot.
I graduated with less than 500. So that is, I guess if you split it between three schools, but it's also, it is a place to hide if you're like, where else do I go?
Yeah, just go in the crowd, go to the cafeteria or something. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's running at gym or something like that. And the cops, they caught up with them eventually, though. But yeah, thank you for sending that in.
Yes, thank you.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal, $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Well, this next one is from Katie, and the subject line is, just creeping? Hello, friends. First, much like your other submissions, I adore your show. You're both wonderful company while I toil away in my basement workshop, creating magic that helps dreams come true. But that's an entirely different story. Anyway, I thought quite a few times about submitting this story, and I'm not sure why I never have. But Facebook reminded me that today, 3/13/25, is the 14-year anniversary of the time an armed, allegedly, man entered our house while on the run from both cops and their canine counterparts. Let me set the scene. It's Michigan, mid-March, and there's still a butt ton of snow on the ground. It was a Sunday, so myself and my parents didn't have work, and all around it was a lazy kind of day. Unfortunately for my mom, though, she was fighting the flu and had kindly asked my dad to go to the drugstore to pick up some NyQuil and throat drops. Being the awesome husband that he is, he agreed, and I decided to tag along with him. The shopping trip wasn't exciting. We got what was needed and I'm sure a few other things before returning to my mom, who was curled up on the living room couch, just wishing the flu would go away. For this next part, I'm going to set the scene and describe for you the layout of our house. When you enter the house via the back door, you immediately step into a mud room or coat room with giant windows on either side that are about 3.5 feet up off the ground. As you exit this back room, you immediately step into the kitchen and can follow the same line through the kitchen into the dining room, attached bathroom on the right-hand side, and then all the way into the living room. Essentially, you can stand at the back door and see all the way to the living room. The way our living room was set up, one could be standing behind the couch and be able to look to the right and see the back door. That someone, on this day, just happened to be me. As I stood at the back of the couch, not 5 minutes into having returned home, I heard the back door open and saw someone step into the house and quickly close the door. At the time, the neighborhood we lived in wasn't dangerous, and we didn't really make a habit of locking the back door. Another important detail is that my older brother was currently living in the basement and had friends that would come and go as family, sometimes when he wasn't even home. And my family was all familiar and friendly with these friends. And that's important. As this man entered the house, I watched him immediately crouch down out of view of the mudroom windows and stalk into the kitchen, hiding at the side of the stove, out of view of the large kitchen window. I thought to myself as I was watching this happen, well, this is strange. Then he looked at me, and I looked at him, and in my glorious, genius, and impeccable comedic timing, asked out loud, "Just creeping?" It then dawned on me that he wasn't familiar and certainly wasn't one of my brother's friends. He didn't acknowledge that I had been speaking to him, so I turned to my dad, sitting on a recliner out of complete view of the man, who now had a very confused look on his face. "I don't know who that is," I said, now a little panicked as adrenaline started coursing through my veins. My mom gasped, and I'm sure screamed, as my dad immediately went into Papa Bear mode. He launched out of the recliner and into the dining room where the man had made it about halfway to the living room. My dad grabbed the man by the two sides of his open jacket and pushed and held him up against the bathroom doorway. I'm pretty sure this man didn't think he would encounter a Papa Bear in this house, and my dad's actions certainly startled him enough to physically disarm him and move him toward the back of the house. When they got to the mudroom, my dad heard shouting and looked out the window to see cops and guns pointed. They told him to stand down and then made their way in the back door to apprehend the man. They took him down in the snow right outside our back door. I've attached a photo of the imprint in the snow. They cuffed him and they hauled him off. One of the officers thanked my dad for his courage, but also let him know how lucky he was because this man had been known to be armed and dangerous in previous law enforcement encounters. Well, needless to say, we were all a little shaken and rattled after the encounter, but after giving our statements and lots of deep breaths, we continued about our day as best we could. A few weeks later, while I was at work, someone came in and served me with papers telling me I would have to testify at this guy's pending trial. Mortified, as I hadn't ever been in a courtroom, I thought to myself how that scenario would go. Would the judge pee themselves laughing when I explained the only thing I did was look at the guy and say, "Just creeping," before my dad sprang into action? Well, thankfully, I was spared, as the man pleaded guilty to a home invasion charge and spared me the horror of having to testify in a courtroom. And our family just chalks the whole thing up to another chapter in our family's crazy book of stories. But for the last 14 years, we have religiously locked the doors in that house, and we often use our new catchphrase, "just creeping," lovingly when we are all together. Thank you, ladies, for spending time reading this crazy little story. I hope you enjoy it and perhaps get a little chuckle too. Thanks for all you do, Katie.
Katie, just creeping. Honestly, sometimes when you don't realize the danger you're in, you're like, it kind of saves you a bit because, right? You know what I mean? Like, instead of immediately panicking and freaking out, you're just kind of casual and the guy's kind of casual. And then Papa Bear comes from around the corner and is like, "Not today, bitch.
I might get you." It made me think of Brandy from Let's Go to Court, RIP to the show, not Brandy. But when she came on Freaky Friday and told us that she caught someone breaking into her garage and was like, "May I help you with anything?
May I help
How's
you?
It going? Yeah. Do you want a drink?" It's like so friendly. And they're like, "I was just going to rob you. I'm sorry.
I guess." Or like the story last week when the general is in there trying to cut stuff out of a sign. And they're like, "Well, it's time to go. Let's turn off all the lights."
It's like you kind of short circuit their brain and it like de-escalates them almost like, "Oh, I just broke in these people's house and that girl's like joking at me." And also like, I was just creepy.
I am just creeping. You like, but how like fucking you saw creepy it. To see somebody walk in and then immediately crouch down. And I think probably you're just running from the cops and the first open door you find, you just go inside. But
thank God
luckily he was not, or he was, I guess, armed, but did not have time to do anything.
No, but I'm happy that dad and Katie came home so mom's not just like vibing on the sofa with her NyQuil and a fucking crazy guy rolls in like, "Don't tell the cops I'm here." You know, I mean,
what's the flu?
Just creeping. Yes. Oh, no.
Be like, "You motherfucker, today is not the day. You don't know how I feel."
Yeah. Depends on how jacked on NyQuil I am. He might not be getting out of that house alive. I'm like, "You ruined my nap. I'll kill you."
Truly. Or I sleep through the whole thing and a whole takedown happens. And then my family gets back. Like,
why is there a caution tape all over the house? Like, I don't know, but did you get my NyQuil? Like, please help me. Oh, well, thank you, Katie.
What a picture, too.
Yeah, I mean, definitely somebody's face got smashed in that snow. You can see
somebody's face just implanted in this snow.
I like your, it says March 13th, 2011, where the guy was taken down and cuffed.
And there it is.
You've got that evidence. Well, thank you, Katie. Goddamn. Sinister Hood, we'll be right back. Well, this last one is from Monica, and the subject line is, my near-death experience was different? Hello, ladies. I'm a huge fan of the show and recommend it to everyone I know. Not only do I enjoy the wealth of knowledge that each of you bring, but I also enjoy how open you both are with your religious beliefs or lack thereof. This actually is what made me write in. I'm a staunch atheist, and dying doesn't scare me so much because of what's on the other side, but rather because of what I may be leaving behind. I believe that once we're gone, that's it. We're gone. I do believe in energy, and so I wouldn't be shocked if spirits and ghosts were real, but I don't think we go to heaven or hell. Anyway, at age 15, I began to experience what I thought was panic or anxiety attacks. I'd suddenly get hit with super fast heart rhythms that would last for an hour, sometimes more, and nothing I ever did stopped it. Doctor after doctor blamed me for it. You drink too much caffeine. You need to lose weight. And so on and so forth. It took the doctor I worked with at age 29 to take one look at me during these so-called anxiety attacks to put me in a room and run an EKG, effectively telling me I probably had a heart issue and needed a cardiologist. Well, guess what? It wasn't my weight or my caffeine consumption after all. I had been born with supraventricular tachycardia, SVT, which is a type of irregular heartbeat, also called an arrhythmia. It's a very fast or erratic heartbeat that affects the heart's upper chambers. The typical heart beats about 60 to 100 times a minute. During SVT, the heart beats about 150 to 220 times a minute. I got up to 260, which my smartwatch would track every single time I had an episode. Typically, I would have one every few months, sometime every few weeks, and they would last anywhere from 45 to 75 minutes. I tried all kind of vagus stimulating exercises, and usually that would stop them. But this one night, nothing worked. I had a rough day at work. I worked in community mental health back then, and I went to bed and had a nightmare about my dog dying and woke up in the middle of an SVT episode. It wouldn't go away, no matter what I did, to the point where I began to feel weak and couldn't stand on my own. So off to the ER, my husband and I went. When I got there and explained my situation, they whisked me off to the back and told me they'd have to give me adenosine, a medicine that basically slows down your heartbeat. A bunch of providers began to gather around my bed for this, saying that each time they administered it, the patients would tell all kinds of tales about their experience, and they were curious what mine would be like, thinking they were a bit dramatic, and being exhausted from my heart rate being above 230, I was ready for the adenosine. Once they released it into my IV, it began to slow my heart rate down. I later checked my watch, and my heart rate went down to 3 beats per minute. While this was happening, I experienced what I think was a near-death experience. I hear everyone talk about bright lights and hallways and doorways and what have you. Mine was very simple, something all of us millennials and Gen Xers have probably seen before. Do y'all remember old school TVs that would slowly turn black while the image would shrink into a tiny square in the middle before shutting off? That's exactly what I saw. No lights, no angels, no doors, no hallways, no salvation, just my life dimming down. Right before the little square could disappear, I felt my heart literally return to normal. I was back and all the doctors were staring at me with crazy hesitation. I told them, and all were surprised by what I saw. Again, they expected lights and angels and whatever. I gave them old TV wind down. I've always wondered if that's because I don't believe in heaven or hell, but well, there you have it. Thanks for reading and thanks for keeping it creepy. With love from the Evergreen State.
Whoa, Monica. Oh, holy shit. Makes my heart race just thinking about it. I mean, double what it should be.
Yes. The times that I've just had, like, I felt like my heart rate's high or whatever, and I look and it's like 94. You know what I mean? And to think that it could be twice that is so, or almost three times, like 260 is so much. That is wild. And then down to three. Girl, you have run the gamut. You've had it all.
You've been on both ends of the spectrum.
Both
there.
Sides.
Yeah. You feel like your heart's just literally beating out of your chest.
Yeah. That's so scary. Well, I'm glad.
What an interesting medicine.
Yeah. That it.
This is how we flatline people.
We start flatlining.
I think this is how we figured it out.
I think you have figured it out. But I'm glad that, first of all, that both sets of doctors, like the diagnosing doctor and then the ER doctor, took it seriously when you're like, I can't stand up and shit is going bad. But that is definitely terrifying where they're like, you know what? No worries. We've got a treatment for this. The treatment is we just shut it down.
And we just turn your heart off.
We'll just turn off and turn it back on. And you're like, I'm sorry, I'm the it that you're turning off.
And then they're like, well, you are a computer. We all know. So, and this is proof because we got to restart you. We got to reboot you.
Unplug me and plug me back in. But no, seriously, that is so scary to even think that you would go to the point where there's even like the picture is so small and you're like, am I fixing it? Like, because what happens when the square goes all the way away?
I think that's it.
That's what she said. She said, That's lights out. Because the near-death experiences, and if you want to read more about them, because it atheists, different types of religion from all over the world. It's a super short read. Dr. Bruce Grayson, the medical doctor that was just kind of like looks into them and kind of judgment-free catalogs them all. And they're trying to put, electrodes on patients. I just read in, maybe it was like Popular Mechanics magazine, to try and get better reads on what your brain is doing in moments like this. Because tachycardia patients like SVT or others with these like major heart issues have these situations where you're like, okay, we know we're about to turn your heart all the way down to three, which is very low. So let's go ahead and put these like electrodes. So I'm sorry. I wish they would have done it, but I'm happy that they focused more on just getting your heart back right rather than like trying to also test you at the time. But that's what I want to know. I'm like, what do we do? What's going on in there? The fireworks.
They got to get everybody together. Like, we're giving another person the medicine. Come gather around, see what happens.
They started doing that where the cardiologist will call the neurologist.
Well, that's what she said they did. They all gathered around saying, what are you going to see when you come out of it?
Give me one of those like they put on Rick Moranis in Ghostbusters. That's what I want. Like, just scan what's going on up there. But man, I'm glad your stuff's under control because that heart stuff is so, so scary. But, and I'm sorry that you had more than one doctor on the front end fucking gaslight you when you're like, I think my heart's going weird. And they're like, I think maybe don't drink as much Starbucks. Mm. And you're like, I'll kill you.
Yeah, that happens all too often. And good for you for continuing to advocate for yourself and for somebody, albeit at 29, taking you seriously and you figure it out.
For sure. It sucks that we have
creepy,
to do that.
Perhaps cool experience. I mean, given the circumstances, you know, it's not probably cool, but it's an experience that very few can say that they've had.
Most definitely. I mean, very few don't want to have it, but especially the fact that you got to go and dip a toe and then come back. That's definitely.
I'll dip a toe.
You want to slow down. You're addicted to flatlining. You're always asking.
I want to know. I feel like, first of all, how do I get my hands on this edinosone? And then I got to get in touch with Kevin Bacon. And then I got to find some willing participants.
Yeah, definitely. Kevin Bacon can come. I said Kira Sedgwick because they're married, but she's the closer.
She's also invited.
She can't come because she's the closer and she'll shut it down. Oh, I don't want the closer.
You're right. No, you can't have her there.
Only Kevin Bacon there. But oh, goddamn. Well, I really hope your heart stuff's under control, Monica. And I'm happy to hear that you finally got a diagnosis. And yeah, let me know if you read Dr. Grayson's book, let me know what you think about it. Because they talk about all just various types of belief systems and how it does. Like I said, that one guy was like, I saw Gandalf.
I think a lot of it can depend on what you believe in your waking life, you know, that carries over.
The trucker guy said, oh, I got sucked down a really long tailpipe. And he was like a lifelong trucker. So I think you're right. It's our own. We put our own layer on it for sure. But thank you for sharing that with us.
Yes. Thank you so much. And thank you to everybody for sending in your Freaky Friday stories. If you have an odd but true story, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO, you had a brush with true crime, or you felt the presence of an otherworldly being, send them in at sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday. And speaking of freaky, got something creepy caught on camera? Found a weird or unexplainable clip online? Maybe you just have a funny video you need us to see. Send it our way and we'll live react to it during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central.
And don't worry, it's still free on Patreon. Just because it's on Patreon, we had to do it Because on Patreon, we can do it bigger, longer, and uncut, as they say.
Oh, my.
There's nothing that's edited.
Name of your porno?
My South Park reference. But there's nothing edited out or anything. YouTube has some things it gets fussy about. So it's absolutely free. You just have to put in your email, similar to YouTube. You just sign up for an account. And it's also part of the community chat. And that is a free and open community chat in Sunday Scary. So you get to see all the dog and cat pictures and
so
stuff,
so many
too.
Pet pictures. Yeah. I like that that's become... kind of a little like ritual pre-show. Of how we open it. Yeah, everyone just sends pictures of their sweet pets to
love it.
Start off the week.
So we'll see y'all Sunday at 8:30.
If you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, and you get cool things like Sunday Scaries and an entire backlog of free content. Or you can dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content, such as Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court, True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime, Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed, and Emma the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
We're also offering free trials, so you can join for free for a week at any of the tiers, check out the perks, and cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. And when you do sign up for a year, first of all, do an annual membership because you save, you get a month free. But when you do sign up for one of the tiers, what does everybody get?
You get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As on the third Thursday of every month, quarterly live bonus content, weekly audio bonus content, mini-sudes, merch discounts, and most importantly, community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Which is the best part of this whole gig, so thank you guys. Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. Thank you so much to everybody who's been leaving us such nice comments and 5 stars. And you can submit topics and cases you'd like for us to cover. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2025. Heather, what is Crime Wave at Sea 2025?
It's the ultimate true crime cruise at sea, November 3rd through 7th. You can join us, Henry and Ed from Last Podcast, the folks from True Crime Campfire, the folks from Scared to Death, and a lot of true crime fans that are ready to have a super fun vacation with all of us and with y'all, doing all the regular crew stuff, eating, cruising, doing that. Plus, there's going to be evening performances by all of us podcasters, and as well as like fun events that we're doing in addition to the performances. So it's the ultimate true crime conference at sea, November 3rd through 7th, crimewave.com/sinister to get your fan code and get you a cabin before they're gone.
Yeah.
Shout out to everybody that's booked so far. We can't wait to go.
For sure.
We're going to post all of those awesome pictures from our vacation together over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. You can like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. You can follow us on YouTube and TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. If you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the fan in your life, we can make a video just for them. They're called cameos. You can either order it for yourself, for a pep talk, advice from us, you're nervous about something, or order it for someone you love to wish them happy birthday, to do congrats on the new baby, congrats on the wedding, anything like that. It's coming up on graduation, Father's Day, Mother's Day. We love to do these custom videos that can be immediately viewed and sent. It's a very thoughtful gift. Always unique. It's not going to ever be the same cameo twice. So even if they've gotten a cameo from us before, they're always different. And it also is something you can order from your phone and you don't have to go anywhere. So cameo.com.
The best slash type
sinister
of gift.
Yeah, slash Sinisterhood. Christy, where can people find you online?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on internet at Heather versus the world.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy.
The new year brings new health goals and wealth goals. Protecting your identity is an important step, Your info is in endless places that could expose you to identity theft, leading to lost funds. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's restoration specialists will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.